of green, red roses too.
This is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net, and your host on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com. Coming to you today from Southern California, I am based in Old Town in San Diego. We have a very special guest today, friend Paul David Walker, CEO and founder of Genius Stone Partners, a consultancy. But today we're about a new book that was just published this summer, Invent Your Future, Starting with Your Calling. Our guest is the author, Paul David Walker. Let's welcome Paul.
Hi, thank you.
So this book and your mission here is all about the essence of powerful leadership. So this is written for CEOs, isn't it?
It's written about CEOs. The information comes from successful self-made CEOs. But honestly, a CEO, a new CEO, an individual who wants to start a business, or an individual who's sort of in the middle ranks and wants to invent their future within the company, the principles apply to anyone who wants to invent their future. The information comes from my work with CEOs.
Paul, let's drill down a little bit and simplify the language just a tad here. There's a lot of happy talk out there about how to do this and how not to think, but I wanted to have you as my guest because you are absolutely the expert at this for many years. So we're not talking about step one, step two, step three. This is more intellectual and it's more of a strategic approach. I could see from your book, the book once again is Invent Your Future, Starting with Your Calling. So this is like a roadmap then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I've taken my insights from working with CEOs to invent their future for 30 years, and then more recently, these 20 that I interviewed, and put it into sections that are relevant and important. And I think each of these sections, while it's not exactly sequential, but it's essential that all these things are in place if you're going to successfully invent your future. I guess I would say that you can't just pick one and hope that'll work. You really have to combine all of it.
In your book, you talk about some basic thoughts here about thinking and preparing your mind for exploration and yourself for making some changes. So what do you mean by you cannot create something that we cannot conceive?
Okay. Basic principle of life is before we do anything, we conceive it in our mind. I mean, if we're hungry and we get this picture in our head of a delicious slice of pizza, shortly thereafter, we'll get on the phone and order one. And really, everything works that way. You first conceive what it is you want to create, and then you can begin to create it. If you don't conceive it first, the journey is going to be wandering and unsuccessful. I've asked at least 100 CEOs to tell me the story about how they created their future, how they created a new strategy. And it always starts with that moment of, I see what we need to do here, right? Now, sometimes that comes after market research. Sometimes it comes after strategic research. Sometimes for an individual, it comes after soul searching. But there's a moment when you can conceive where you want to go. That's the beginning of the journey. If you can't conceive it, you can't create it.
Now, this gets into, sure, in your own mind, if not on paper, in words,
yeah,
and graphics. Yeah. So about painting a picture and imagining how you do things a little different from what's already done, because you're not going to, a sane person won't create something that's already being done. They want to do it a little bit different. So we're talking,
yep,
about innovation of some kind.
It is. And, you know, it starts with a picture in your mind, but it ends with a mission statement, a vision statement that you publish either in your corporate newsletter or in your strategic plan or in your life plan that is clear, because you want to be able to share this picture with other people who might follow you. You know, whether you're starting a business, whether you're trying to improve your status in the company, whether you're trying to build a business strategy, at some point in time, you have to formalize it because you want people to understand what you're trying to create so that they can support and help you. I say to individuals, start with 10 people who can tell your story. Get up to 15, get up to 20. Most of the CEOs I work with have hundreds, if not thousands, of people who can tell their story, who have that picture or their value to a company or their value added in any situation. So being able to paint it and then communicate it is dead critical to success.
In forming a team, is this like an advisory council?
Well, yeah. Yeah, you would have an advisory council of people who get what you're trying to do, who coach you, who give you feedback on how you're doing, who, like a board of directors, will, you know, bring you resources that might help you succeed. Sure, you could call it an advisory council, particularly the first 10 or 15. Yeah.
So a lot has to do with self-discovery, though. Being an entrepreneur, this is not easy. It might change from day to day, and you wake up one morning, 3 o'clock, saying, I got to do something different about the old thing. So you have to discover your gifts and your passion. You have to know thyself. Could you dig down on that a little bit, discovering your gifts and passion?
Yeah. So the simple story I use in the book, I use it over and over again. If you think you're a great dancer and you go to the company party and you dance in front of everybody and it turns out you're a horrible dancer, people are going to talk about you for a couple of weeks, how bad you are. And I think that's the case in everything. If you think you're good at something you're not good at, then you know your journey's going to be ugly and painful. What you got to figure out is what is your essential gifts that you bring to the table, things that you're naturally good at, and build your business or build the growth in your life around the things you're naturally good at. I was just coaching a senior executive on that, and what he was doing is most of the way he interacted in the company was all the ego stuff, all the fears, all the sort of habitual behaviors. And when I worked with him and realized that basically three things that he's just masterful at, then what I do with him then is, okay, now everything you do, use these three things because these are your gifts. These are the things you're naturally good at. It's authentic. It's real. And even when you're building corporate values, you got to start with the leader's core values or the leader's core gifts and see how those things synchronize as a team. And that becomes, you know, the values of the company. It's knowing yourself. If you don't know yourself, go back to school because you're not going to succeed in this world. Now, you could get lucky, sure, but chances are that luck will run out shortly after it hits you if you're not leading from who you naturally are.
Not everybody has this wisdom, so it's an acquired trait, I guess, right?
Yeah, most people get lost in who they think they should be, who people have told them they should be. I know when I first came to America from England, I was living my father's dream. And once I realized, you know, I need to live my own dream, then I started to get very successful. But most people do not know themselves. But, you know, it's not that far below the surface. When I work with them, it might take a couple of hours. Here is a little retreat center that I have. But I can generally get to their core gifts pretty quickly. And once they recognize that, they recognize it. It's not like a mystery. Once we uncover it and they go, oh, yeah, always been good at this. So why not use it? You know, why not build your business and your leadership around what you're naturally good at?
In my experience, I was marketing along and doing okay for a while, and then a competitor came on, and it was like my eyes were wide open. So, and then all of a sudden, I was overtaken, or not just me, but my belief or my system of doing business and my market share was overtaken. And it's like I got slapped on the side of the head one day before I was able to respond to a reality. And I'm still responding you know, to that. But I have stepped aside and gotten some insight, a third eye or something, and have used it to learn from and to develop alternatives that have actually created a new market niche or niches. I'm sure that's not the right way of saying it, but anyway, more segments. And things are going okay and developing. It's like rebirth, a refire with inside our organization. So talk about responding to reality.
I use the word respond instead of react, okay? When you respond to reality, you're responding. I mean, stuff happens. It doesn't matter how clear your mission is, how clear the picture of the future is. Like you say, competitors come in, things happen. If you react, you're going back to your old habit. Reactions come from our old habits, our fears, our crazy, unsubstantiated dreams that our ego puts up. That's reacting. And that's habitual behavior. And generally, it's not going to work because it comes from the past. If you respond, you're seeing reality come at you, just like an athlete in the zone, a tennis player sees the ball, sees the spin of the ball, and automatically responds to the moment. So responding is thoughtful. Responding is authentic. And it's completely different from reacting. Most people react, especially when they're in trouble. And when you react, you go to your old habits. When you're in trouble, you need to stop. You need to get feedback from maybe colleagues or friends in the marketplace. You need to relook at sort of the mission of your business or your company to see if, you know, you're on target. Markets change too. I mean, competitors come in and take your market, but market wants and needs tend to shift and change. You have to be on it. Now, if you know yourself, you're still coming from that challenge from your natural gifts, right? You're still, that's authentic. That doesn't change. If you've done your homework really well, you're going to be ahead of the curve in terms of the market. Your vision and mission statement is going to be very clear. But nonetheless, stuff happens, and you better be ready, and you better be reflective on a continuous basis. You need to challenge yourself. You need to challenge your model continuously because the world changes. It's not going to be the same, especially today with the internet and the vast shifts in market trends. I mean, we used to tell people back in the old days when we turned around retail companies that, you know, a customer complaint, when a customer has a complaint, they generally tell 12 people. When something goes right, they tell two or three. That was before the internet. Now, when a customer has a complaint, it doesn't go well, they'll tell thousands of people via the internet. So you better have your game on. It better be right.
So just as an aside, we're basically in the advertising business here, how things have changed. I was watching America's Got Talent last night, and it says for the first time in a long time. Actually, the show was quite entertaining. It was very well put together. But they had, I mean, literally, almost 100 commercials within a one-hour time frame. Some were a minute, you know. Some were 15 seconds, even 10 seconds. My God, it was one right after another. It was just awful. And it just made the show almost unbearable. And yet you go to the internet, and on a typical website, you have some banner ads and you have some other intrusions, but you can get rid of them really fast. So, I mean, here is a change that's happening in big business in America and elsewhere. And you think the jury's out about what to do about all this, because you need the ads to survive on, but certainly you're going to be turning off buyers, people.
I was just meeting with a marketing specialist for lunch, and one of the things that she says is that you've got to sort of do guerrilla marketing so that your ads, and not only your ads, but the way you place yourself in the market is fitting into the, you know, emerging trends. One of the things I talk about in later chapters is mastering inner stillness. Right? So a hurricane, the center of it is still most powerful storm in the world. When the stillness of the center of that hurricane breaks up, so does the power of the storm. The same is true for a leader or a team of leaders. If they have a real inner stillness, they're observing what's going on. They are present. They see emerging trends early as they emerge. Instead of getting blindsided, they take the time to stop and reflect and observe what's going on. So they can start responding earlier. One of the, Heath Clark, who started local.com, told me a story in the book that he saw some emerging change. And literally in 2 weeks, he changed his whole website, his whole approach. His two competitors did not, and they went out of business. And that's because he had this ability to be still, to focus and observe, you know, the flow of cause and effect, observe emergence, if you will. The best leaders are really good at catching it early, positioning their business, their life, if it's just a person, to surf on that emerging trend.
Well, well said. So how can we look for ways internally to appreciate value and value skills that are very, very relevant for an entrepreneur and running an organization or being in a leadership role of any kind? What is a route to go for somebody who's experienced and has done it and maybe forgot how to do it again? You know, how do you reinvent this?
Reinvent yourself? Well, one, if you know yourself, you know your core skills, so those are not going to change, except if you practice them and work with them, they'll get better and better. You know, once you have core skills, I mean, my core skills are, one is kindness, empathy. I have a very high level of kindness and empathy. Two, I have insight, pattern recognition that is, you know, way above average. And three, I inspire people. Those are three things I do. I do best, whether I'm writing a book, whether I'm doing a strategic plan, whether I'm coaching a leader. If I'm coming from those three things, it's going to affect what I do in a positive way. Now, interesting story in terms of this intuition. I worked with Don Ross at New York Life in the 80s. He was the CEO. And I was helping with culture shaping, and his people would come to me and say, Paul, you know, Don's losing it. He's like completely doing all the wrong things. He's asking us in the investment department to gradually pull our investments out of the stock market, which is going up. He won't let us invest in high yield bonds. It was even an article in the New York Times that said, God, Don is losing it. Time for him to retire. Of course, this was the summer of 87, and in October of 87, the market lost half its value. So then Don was a genius, and nobody knew that was coming. And I asked him, I said, Don, how did you know? And he said, well, Paul, in my role, you get all kinds of advisors. They're all Ivy League. They're all from Harvard, Yale, Princeton. And generally, there's three or four courses I can take. And whenever I've gone against my intuition, I've regretted it. And I said, well, Don, well, what do you mean by intuition? He says, intuition, Paul, is you know the difference between the feeling that comes from your ego, either fear or wild and crazy hopes, and the feeling that comes from your insight and true knowledge. The feeling is different. It's similar. But you have to know the difference between what your ego is trying to sell you and what reality is. Once you know that, the decisions you make become more profound and effective.
Wow. Talking with Paul David Walker, author of a new book called Invent Your Future, Starting with Your Calling. Paul, drill down a little bit here on the subtitle, Starting with Your Calling. Explain that.
All right. So your calling is not, I want to be a musician, I want to be a CEO, whatever. Your calling is what we've been talking about, this essence of who you are. It's a God-given gift. This is your call. You're called to live your life from, it's generally three things, a trinity of some kind. Everything comes in a trinity, you know, mind, body, spirit, man, woman, child. In Christianity, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. All the way through, it's a trinity. Your calling is to live from that natural gift, that natural God-given trinity, I call it. I described mine to you. That is your call. Not, I want to be a musician. It's how you be a musician. It's how you be a CEO. It is the essence of who you are.
And this unleashes the genius within you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's your natural gift. And once you discover it, it's like a new golf swing. Sometimes it takes a while to go, oh, geez, how do I live my life, you know, by these principles? But, you know, everything takes practice. Every chapter in the book, I'm saying there is no substitute for practice. It's like a golf swing. Once you know the new and correct golf swing for your body and your size and all that, your score's probably going to go up for a while until you practice it and get good at it. But if you never know your calling, if you never know who you are, all the practice in the world will never make you a master. But if you know who you are, you know your calling, what you're called to bring into the world, if you will, and you practice it, and it becomes integral to the way you lead, the way you live your life, there's no limit to how good you can get at that.
Talking with Paul David Walker, author of the new book, Invent Your Future, Starting with Your Calling, Mr. John King, the best-selling author of Tribal Leadership, says of this book, there are years of learning available in this book, Invent Your Future. Do not be surprised when, over the years ahead, you find yourself referencing this book repeatedly. It's that good. And now, folks, you've heard from Paul, the company is Genius Stone, and that's the name of the website, geniusstone.com. I'm looking at it right now, and Paul, you have a quote there. Teams, meaning work teams, business teams, with clear mission, sense of urgency, the stillness of a master, and explosive targeted actions are the ones that will win in the 21st century. Well, that's really a powerful sentence, and it's just like almost overwhelming, almost like a tsunami wave coming at you with thoughts and feelings here.
The 21st century is about collaboration. Complexity is at a level that it was never at before. And if you don't have teams of people bringing their wisdom and their natural gifts to the table, you're going to get lost. It's teams, right? Teams that work together and see patterns. In order to do that, you have to have this inner stillness that I talked about earlier. And you know, it's not about philosophy. It's about taking that wisdom that comes from the team and creating these explosive actions that are right. And at some point, if you do your homework, you know what's right. You know it, but some people know it and are afraid to act. It's only the teams that know what to do, know who they are, and act with passion and power. Those are the ones that are going to win every time.
That's the essence of powerful leadership from Paul David Walker, our guest today on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com, a service of GlobalBusinessNews.net. This is Ed Cohen thanking Paul David Walker for being our guest on Global Radio Talk Show. It's all about Invent Your Future. Go get it. InventYourFutureBook.com. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Okay, this is Ed, signing off from Old Town, San Diego.
What a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.